Support for WVIK comes from Kathleen Collins at the Dragonfly in Bettendorf. Using both conventional and alternative counseling methods for empowerment to help create change for individuals and couples. More information is at KathleenCollinsCounseling.com.
This is Ben Goujon with Quad City Arts, and welcome back to Talking Art, supported by Quad City Bank and Trust. Today, I am talking art with theater artist Bradley Robert Jensen, who's directing the Tony Award-winning musical Fun Home at the Black Box Theater in downtown Moline. Bradley, welcome to Talking Art.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
I am so excited to have you here because Fun Home is honestly one of my favorite musicals. I was so excited when I saw that it was happening. I was even more excited when I saw that you were directing it. Yeah. So tell me, what's Fun Home?
So Fun Home is the musical adaptation of the autobiographical graphic novel by comic artist and author Alison Bechdel. She was made famous for her long-running graphic novel, or comic strip that ran for almost 30 years, Dykes to Watch Out For, and then released Fun Home, which is the story of sort of her relationship with her father in conjunction with her discovering her sexuality and queerness, sort of concurrently as that interacts with her father also being queer and that ultimately leading to his death. And so this is the musical adaptation of that novel that she wrote in 2006. It opened in Broadway 2015 and won the Tony Award that season for Best New Musical. And this is the first time that it's been done in the Quad Cities, which is amazing.
I'm just thrilled it's being done. When I saw it on Broadway, and it was my favorite musical that I saw my whole time in New York.
Sure.
Like, it just blew me away. The book is by Lisa Kron. The score and the lyrics are by Janine Tesori. Mm-hmm. So two titans in the theater world.
Yeah.
And it's gorgeous. It's emotionally devastating.
Yes.
Like, and not to be like downer, but it's beautiful and it's funny and it's heartfelt. It's all the things.
Yeah. And That writing team injected such perfect moments of levity into the show so that those like moments of depth can be explored so well. You know, there's such fun moments, especially like from her childhood and her first relationship with Joan, that we get to see moments that like bring light and life and laughter into the script, so that those moments where very hard conversations are being had or difficult ideas are being processed, that those don't like weigh you down. You don't feel heavy by the end of it. And it ends on such a like hopeful note too, it's just so masterfully constructed, especially the way that it follows Allison at three different stages of her life. In the musical, it's played by three different actresses. We've got the young Allison, who's like 10, and then in college, and then an adult. And so it's all woven together.
Yeah, like, and the way it's done is so beautiful. And seeing her at those three separate ages and her father at those ages and how she's interacting with him, whether he's present or not,
right?
Like, is just such a beautiful story. And it's coming of age, and it's there's romance, and there's also this introspective memory play aspect of it that just – it blends so seamlessly.
Yeah.
Real quickly, did you choose this show to do, or did Laura do it?
No, so I was directing The Truth at the Black Box, which was my first time directing for her. I love the programming that they do at the Black Box so much. It's one of my favorite theaters in the Quad Cities, as an audience member and as a participant. And so I was directing that last summer, and Laura said that she was thinking about doing Fun Home this next season. And I literally immediately said, I'll move mountains. You know, like, I know that I'll have a sort of busy year and season, but I want to do it.
Yeah.
And so we made it happen.
Here we are.
Here we are.
Before we dive back into Fun Home, I'm glad you brought up the programming at the Black Box, yeah, because I feel like Laura does theatrically the most adventurous
she does
programming in town.
Yeah, for sure.
And it's such a great home I have seen and found personally, mm-hmm, for so many theater artists, mm-hmm, who want to do something,
yeah,
that is outside of a, you know, a traditional Broadway musical that we may see at other theaters.
Yeah, well, and what's interesting is, like, it's so interesting that the Black Box is the only place doing this sort of programming when there are so many theaters in the Quad Cities. And they all, of course, have their own flavor. You know, yeah, like, every theater has sort of its own specialty. But I think it's so interesting and so great that she's really the only one who, like, I would believe would do Fun Home here. And some of the other plays that she's done.
Yeah.
It feels like a, you know, really cool studio theater that you see in, like, much larger theater areas, that's not represented here, you know, otherwise.
Well, yeah, and especially, like, with, you know, Mockingbird on Main and the, mm-hmm, the disaster that happened, yeah, over in Davenport being gone, you know. And she is so open to artists coming in and, yes, approaching her with a script.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, she's got House of Ruckus and Barely There Theater both have sort of, like, found their new home. They, mm-hmm, both were, like, sort of housed in the Mockingbird on Main, which was sort of my, like, home outside of Circa,
sure,
you know, theater for the first 2 years that I was here, before it collapsed. But both of those companies have sort of moved into that to fill out the programming in the Black Box. So it, on top of doing these, like, really cool, meaningful, artistic and different plays, and even the musical programming that she does is different, yeah, than, like, the other places that do musicals in town. It's also sort of this home for small, scrappy new work theater companies as well.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which I always love. And those places always need a home. So I'm, yeah, so glad that, you know, there is a place for those artists, right, to go. And I mean, I love new work, obviously, mm-hmm, like,
right,
my theater company, we create original pieces. Yeah. So I'm always a huge proponent of anywhere that is promoting that stuff. And, yeah, there's certainly a place for the classics.
Right.
But,
oh, absolutely,
you have to have that balance of both. And one thing that was so exciting to me about Fun Home as a show and seeing that Laura was doing it is it's, you know, so much of Broadway now is either an adaptation of a 1980s, yeah, comedy or a revival of a show that's been around for, right, 80 years.
Right.
And to see something that was so new and so original, yeah, adapted from a graphic novel.
Right.
You know, and I remember.
And, like, an autobiographical graphic novel,
yeah,
too.
Like, yeah.
Which is, like, such a wild, uh-huh, thing in and of itself.
Yeah, and I just remember so specifically the way the lighting was done in that,
oh,
original,
sure,
production. The lighting designer did a lot of things with squares of, mm-hmm, light on stage. Mm-hmm. So it felt like you were watching a graphic novel in that,
sure,
aspect. Like,
sure,
they were at least paying homage to, yeah, its original source material.
Yeah.
And it was just, it's such an incredible piece, you know, and I love that it's, you know, that a piece of this very obscure kind of source material.
Yeah.
That's, you know, queer theater,
yeah,
and theater about something that isn't typically a musical.
Yeah.
Like, became just this gorgeous, gorgeous musical.
Yeah.
It's, like I said, it was my favorite show that I saw, my favorite musical that I saw in New,
yeah,
York.
Yeah.
Hands down. It blew me away. And I want to talk a little bit about the music of it because,
sure,
there's, you know, you referenced it a little bit earlier, mm-hmm, with the kids, but, like, you know, there's these very emotionally heart-wrenching songs.
Mm-hmm.
But then, like, the levity that you talked about, mm-hmm, with, like, the Come, like, to the Fun
to
Home
the fun
song
home.
That,
yeah,
was one of the funniest moments I've ever seen in a,
yeah,
theater.
Yeah, it's so funny because we've got these, like, three kids dancing around a casket making a commercial for their family funeral home.
Yeah.
Like, it's ridiculous. And they're like going around and picking up all the items that you find in a funeral home. And they're like, this is an aneurysm hook. You know? And that's, it's not like, it's pretty early in the show. Show two is when that happens. And then there's this like huge Partridge Family full production number at like the halfway mark, which is super fun. Almost a dream sequence, not quite, you know, but I mean, it is a dream sequence, not quite a dream ballet, but production number.
Well, and then, you know, we talked a little bit about this earlier too, but the, you know, the play is told through the lens of Allison, our central character, looking back as a 43-year-old, I think.
Yeah.
And, you know, we see her in these two very distinctive periods of her life when she's 10 and kind of first realizing that maybe she's different.
Mm-hmm.
And then in college when she is kind of going through her coming out process.
Yeah.
I'm super curious about your casting of those roles.
Yeah.
Because you have to find three actors who are believably the same people in three very distinct stages of life. Who's playing them?
Yeah, so our adult Allison is Sydney Richardson, who I have gotten to work with numerous times, not as a director, but as a costumer, as a friend, as as a coworker. And I've admired her work so much, and her audition was just amazing, and I knew that she could carry this show. And while she's about a decade and a half younger than what the character is written to be, she carries the show so beautifully. You know, we just started running this week. We open next week, and so we just started running, and she never leaves the stage. The stamina that she has to emotionally carry this show while also guiding us sort of on this narration is just insane. So she's sort of the central Allison, the adult Allison. And then Tatum Kilberg is playing medium Allison. I've known them for a little bit. I haven't gotten to work with them before, really. I costumed them in To Kill a Mockingbird at the Black Box that Mockingbird on Main produced last year. I've worked with their sister, Sophia, multiple times, and I'm good friends with her. And so, but their audition was just amazing. I think we had probably 15 people, maybe more, I don't know, that either came to the auditions or sent in a submission for the medium Allison role. And so that was the one where I had 30.
all the options.
Yeah, so many options, and there is just this energy that was so it made me feel like I was reading the graphic novel in a lot of ways. With those just the sort of frenetic and concerned energy that that medium Allison has. I felt like I was watching a finished version in the audition callbacks and readings sort of thing with Tatum. And so that's Tatum. And then Lucy Emmerly is playing our small Allison, and she's just so darling.
Yeah.
I did not know her at all before, but she showed up to the auditions and sang one of the Little Red Riding Hood songs from Into the Woods, and was just so spunky and cute. And
and that whole Emmerly clan is so steeped in theater.
Yes, yeah. I'm aware of her siblings and family. But hadn't worked with any of them really before. But she's just so great.
That's awesome. And she, to me, she has the song of the show.
Right. Ring of Keys.
Yeah. If you don't know Ring of Keys, it's a song sung by 10-year-old Allison, basically about the first time she sees this, as she says, an old school butch walk into this coffee shop that she's in, who's a UPS driver or something, and kind of has this moment of awakening. I can't hear this song without just sobbing. Mm-hmm. It's so beautiful. It's so poignant. Sydney Lucas, who played the original small Allison, sang it on the Tony Awards. Mm-hmm. And that was my first time seeing it. And I saw that.
I think that was my first introduction to it. I need to go see the show
right now. It's just such a beautiful song.
Mm-hmm.
And I cannot wait to see her sing it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's such a beautiful scene.
Yeah, and it's sweet and innocent, but just speaks to that time where you're mm-hmm. you're aware of, I've had this feeling that
yeah.
I didn't know what it was,
yeah.
and then I saw it.
Right.
And it all kind of revealed itself
yeah,
to me.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. There are so many, like, references to that throughout the show of the, like, self-realization and self-actualization of, like, queerness when you don't grow up in a place where, like, queerness is allowed
right.
or talked about. I mean, I identify so deeply with, and so it's so amazing to see them put so, like, succinctly and plainly and, you know, yeah. at these different levels of understanding, too. You know, like, she understands her queerness in such a different way when she's 10 as she does when she's 18, as she does when she's 43, you know? And so it's so great. And Ring of Keys, obviously, like, is the anthem of this show.
Yeah.
And it has become that for a reason, you know, like it's such a great song, but I think the, like, the lyrics and the writing are so cool too. And it's, I think it's like 3 panels in the graphic novel. Like it's not a big scene
right.
in the graphic novel, but it's such a identifiable moment in, like, the collective queer memory, you know, that
yeah.
That it makes so much sense to me that that was the thing that was pulled out to be a bigger moment in the show and that has become, like, the most well-known moment of the show in the last decade that it's been around.
Yeah, and that speaks to, you know, I grew up doing a lot of musicals,
mm-hmm.
but never really liked musicals.
Sure.
I did them because they were, like, I loved doing straight plays.
Uh-huh.
And when I was in grad school, we were kind of forced to do stuff in music, to either be in musicals mm-hmm. or audition for them mm-hmm. and take classes. And I really fought against it because
sure.
I was rebellious.
You wanted
the time.
To be a serious actor.
That's yeah. right. But one thing that I really took away was one of my professors talking about a song in a musical being that moment when your emotions mm-hmm. and feelings are so big
right.
that you have no other way to express
right.
it
Absolutely.
Other than song. You know, and that's what this moment is.
Right.
You know, and yeah, it can be displayed in 3 panels in the graphic novel.
Yeah.
But it's so big that
right.
it just can't be contained other than
yeah. Yeah.
your swagger and your bearing.
Yeah. Yeah, and your ring of keys.
Yeah.
Your short hair and your dungarees.
Yeah. We're just going to have a sing-along now.
I know. Cue the piano.
Mark, you can play piano, right? Sweet. Okay. I wanted to talk to you about, because this is also not a, you know, this is not a Music Man musical.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not a sung through musical.
Right.
Or, you know, it is, to me, it's a play that just happens
with
to
music.
Be a lot,
yeah.
a lot sung. How did you approach directing that versus a straight play?
Mm-hmm.
Or versus, like, a musical.
A more traditional musical. Yeah. Collaboratively.
Sure.
was the only way to do it. So Cindy Ramos is our music director.
Mm-hmm.
And so she and I met, I think a few weeks before audition started. That was the first time that we had met. I've not
yeah.
worked with her until this. And I knew that because I told Laura, I'm doing this no matter what that means for me outside of Fun Home.
When right.
she said that she was doing it, what that means is to put the show up in 5 weeks, which I feel like is appropriate for a small musical
yeah.
when people have other jobs outside of rehearsals, meant that to accomplish that was opening 2 weeks after I opened Chicago,
which is a huge show
that we just opened. And I did, I think it was something like 200 built pieces for
oh
the show
gosh.
Between the actual costumes and headdresses and other accessories and that sort of thing. So a huge build for me. And so they were starting music rehearsals while I was starting tech for Chicago. And so my pre-production was insane. You know, I knew that I had to, because I started staging the day after we opened Chicago.
Yeah.
And so I knew that for that to happen, the foundation had to be laid. They had to know their music well. They had to, the moments that were choreographed by Kira Lynn, who was our choreographer, who is such a great collaborator too, those things had to be really set and lived in before I could start staging, so that everything could flow effectively. Right. You know, while I agree it feels more like a play with music than it does a musical, the music is constant.
Yeah.
Like, because not only are there these songs, it's underscored. Right. Almost the whole time. There are very few moments of true silence in the show. So the music is so integral because they sort of almost switch between speaking and singing in the songs and in the what would traditionally be viewed as book scenes. And so you know, we, like, me and Emma, who's our stage manager, and Cindy and Kira had all these, like, collaborative discussions trying to figure out how to make all this happen in the time allotted, with also all these kids who were in, it's the end of the school year, so scheduling is a nightmare with all [S2] Right. [S1] Of the additional programming that happens. And we have this incredible cast who is busy too, you know, who are constantly being pulled
so
in different
you got Tristan
productions.
To play
oh
Bruce.
My gosh, me too. We can talk about him later. Yeah. But but yeah, so trying to figure out the puzzle pieces of how to get it to feel lived in with such a tight schedule too. I was really scared going into that first staging rehearsal. But we wound up, you know, I had, like, very precise, I'm giving myself 15 minutes for this scene and, you know,
sure.
that sort of thing. Because
yeah.
I had to, you know, yeah. like, I'm usually, when I direct, I like to be very collaborative mm-hmm. with the actors as well. I don't love, as an actor or a director, I don't love full, like, pre-blocking, you know.
Yeah.
And so usually I'll be like, okay, you're entering from here. Here's where the couch is. Here's where you have to exit. Let's play around, you know.
Yeah.
But I knew that both because of the intricacies of this script and the, like, the sort of not obstacles, but, like, interesting features of the space at the Black Box.
Yeah.
Like, where there's a, like, 18-inch crossover behind right. the set.
And you have a very wide,
and it's very
but
wide,
narrow.
But not deep.
Yeah.
And so I was like, I've got to do more skeleton work on the blocking than what I usually do. And so, but because I was able to do that, I was able to predict how long things would take.
Sure.
You know? And I was like, and then we can play after we build the skeleton. But I was like, we're not playing yet. You know, usually I start with play and then polish from there. But I was like, we've got to start with structure and then add the play later for this one. And so we got to that first blocking rehearsal, which I think was 4 hours. And at like 2.5, we had gotten through what I had planned to do for that day. So we just
nice.
Kept going, you know, the actors all showed up ready to work and have continued to show up ready to work.
That's awesome.
Every day. And like the notes that I give are being incorporated quickly and effectively. And so we wound up, I had pretty much allowed that whole first week to like build the bones of the show. But by Wednesday of that first week, we did like a full walkthrough. In
that's
order.
Awesome.
So like, and that speaks to the actors, I think, more than me, because
sure.
they were ready. They understood what I was asking of them. They were willing to go with that. And then because, I forget who described the graphic novel and the musical in this way. Someone who wrote about it said it. I don't remember who it was at this point, but they described it as like a swirl of memories rather than linear, you know. Especially I've been rereading the, I think I've read the graphic novel like 5 times now, 3 of those after, like after knowing that this was happening, you know, I'd read it a couple times before, but I think I've read it 3 or 4 times since starting pre-production officially for this. And I just finished my like most recent reread this morning, but it's so interesting because
preparing for the interview.
Well, preparing for the book club that I'm leading at Atlas later today.
Soft plug, Atlas Collective, soft fun home book club.
Yeah, tonight. I doubt that this will be out by then. But no. I'm retroactively.
Get in your time machine.
Yeah. But so we see she animates herself in all these past places so clearly that we know this is 6-year-old Allison. This is 10-year-old Allison. This is freshman year Allison of college versus sophomore year. You know, like, and we see them all. We see all of those versions of her all throughout the graphic novel. And that's the case, too, in the musical. While, like, each of the 3 Allisons move sort of linearly within their own storylines, their storylines are stacked on top of each other, you know, and so so it really does feel like a swirl, like everything is just moving around that central adult Allison for 90 minutes, you know.
Well, and that, you know, that's how memory works. It's not like I wake up and like I remember my life chronologically,
right?
You know,
I remember moments, and then as I'm thinking about this moment from when I was in college, I realize how connected that was to this moment in my childhood and what that means for my marriage now, you know, like, and so that's really how the play is structured. And yeah, so on top of that, like the pre-work that was necessary for that, like I said, the actors have just been like just shown up to work. We started staging, I think 2 weeks ago now, a week and a half. I don't really know what day it is even.
Yeah.
But we've had like 3 full runs with notes by now, you know.
That's awesome.
We have moved at such a quick pace, and that's because they've been ready and down, you know. And they've showed up prepared to work.
And that speaks, I mean, I always think to the culture you're setting in the rehearsal room, and having worked with you before, I know you are a great culture person to have around and on the team. But also to the material. When it's material that people want to work on, they show up to work.
Yes, absolutely. It's like, because it's so different from what's being done elsewhere, everyone wanted to work on this, you know? Yeah. And there was no trouble finding the people to cast it. You know, I've done other shows where, because we have so many companies doing so much work in the area, that is relatively small. Sometimes the pool is pretty tight to do all the programming that happens. And so I've been on both sides of the audition table, where it's much harder to get those 9 people that you need, you know, but people cared so much about this show and wanted this to happen and wanted to be a part of it that that was absolutely not the case. And so, yeah, people wanted to do this material. People care about the material. And, yeah, it's so great that, that everyone is so game.
Well, and, you know, it's one of those shows, I know for me, when I saw that it was being produced, I was excited earlier, I guess last year, on the podcast when Jonathan Turner and I were doing kind of a like best of 2024, what we're looking forward to in 2025. You know, we both tagged Fun Home as.
Yeah. That's well, on and the Jonathan list. Turner is working on it too. He's playing piano for it.
Oh, wonderful.
And I hadn't worked with him in that capacity before. I only had known him as a reviewer.
Mm-hmm.
But his piano playing is so gorgeous. And he's been, awesome. You know, he's, because he's playing piano for the pit, for the show, he's been also the rehearsal pianist. And so it's been so amazing having him in the room too. and getting to see that other side of him.
Yeah.
He's so talented.
Yeah. Speaking of talent, we mentioned Tristan Tapscott is in the show playing Bruce.
He sure is.
Allison's father. One of my favorites is playing Joan.
Yeah, Jacqueline Isaacson.
Jacqueline Isaacson.
Yeah.
I'm so excited to see her in that role.
Yeah, she's so great.
That's one of my other, I think, just favorite numbers of the show is...
Yeah, Changing My Major.
Changing My Major to Joan.
Yeah.
Just lovely.
Yeah.
Who else is in the show? Who's playing the young man?
So Topher Elliott is playing the Roy Track, who I first met. He played the wolf in Countrysides Into the Woods, which I costume designed a few years ago. And then he and I were in Kinky Boots together at Music Guild. We were angels and we did our makeup next to each other. And so that's really where, like, I feel like we got close together. We shared the stage in Rocky Horror this last year at the Speakeasy.
Mm-hmm.
He now works as a bootlegger at Circa 21. And so,
awesome.
So I see him very regularly. He's got such an incredible voice. So his Raincoat of Love is such a treat. And his scenes, especially most of his scenes are with Tristan. And this Roy Track is all of the sort of like young men in Allison's life. And
yeah.
We find out later that several of those young men were inappropriate relationships that her father had had, sort of like under her family's nose. those scenes are really, you know, they're awful, but they're really great. The two of them have great chemistry together too, which is great.
And who's playing the mother?
Kat Jacqueline is playing the mom, who I had not known before this, but she she's on the board at the Black Box, and which I also didn't know when she auditioned. You know, it was very much a like cold audition for me. But she's so fabulous. Her Days, which is Helen's big song, and what would be like Act Two, you know, towards the end of the show, Her Days is just stunning. Her vocally, her mix is so great. So she like goes so easily between sort of this like uptight classical style singing and this like guttural, visceral like belt and back and forth between them, which dramaturgically is so juicy, you know, in this song where she's doing the same thing, where she's had 20 years of putting on a brave face and a perfect family face and is for the first time allowing herself to talk about to her adult daughter what that mask is and like how it's fake, and she's finally breaking down. And so it's so amazing to have someone who vocally is able to do that as well as acting wise, you know.
Yeah.
That song has been one of my songs for so long, you know, like I've been listening to this soundtrack so regularly for the decade since I discovered it.
Yeah.
But Days has always been one of my favorites. And so it's so amazing to get to watch it every night now, but yeah, it's really just such a powerhouse. And then rounding out the cast are, Jack Carslake and Brighton Grime are splitting the role of John, which is one of the brothers. And then Kyla Garris is playing Christian, who is the other brother. And then that's the cast. It's nine people.
Awesome. Yeah. I cannot wait to see it.
Yeah.
I'm so excited. Before we go, you mentioned Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
You are not just a theater director.
Right.
You are a costumer, an actor, a playwright.
Yeah.
A multi-hyphenate.
Yeah.
A theater artist.
Yeah. I know. I always feel so pretentious when I'm being asked to like send in a bio. And I'm like, well, what bio do you want? You know?
Right.
And so every time I always just say like, before you get it twisted, I do a lot, you know? So I always start with that multi-hyphenate theater artist, which like is 17,000 letters long to say right at the start of a bio, but it's the only thing that feels appropriate. You know, I was having this conversation with Ashley Becker. We were at the opening night of Heartbreak Hotel together at Circa, and we were sitting together, and she also wears 3,000 hats.
Mm-hmm.
And And someone else who was at the table asked both of us, like, which, like, of the things that you do, which is your favorite, you know? And both of us had, like, similar answers, which is, like, I don't, and my answer specifically was, like, I can't imagine not doing any of them. Like, I think I would not be happy if I didn't get to do other things, you know? And so, like, my primary job and what my focus in most of my professional life has been is costuming, and I'm very happy doing that. But I don't think I would be very happy doing that if I didn't get to, like, perform occasionally, if I didn't get to direct occasionally, if I didn't get to, like, spend some time writing each time, you know?
Yeah.
And I also know from, like, the single audition season that I did my senior year of college that I would not be happy being a full-time actor, you know? While, like, primarily I work as a costume designer, I am very much all of those other things, and I could not be a costume designer if I was not also doing those things.
Sure.
And I think I'm better at each of the things that I do because of everything else I do. You know, I don't think about everything in terms of costumes, but I also don't think of costumes only in the terms of costumes. I think about it dramaturgically, like, how I have learned how to think about things with from directing. I think about things as an actor because I am an actor. I interact with actors differently because I have been where they are too, you know?
Yeah.
I can direct and have conversations with designers and technicians in a different way than other directors because I work as a designer and as a technician, you know? And so I think I'm more well-rounded in each of these things by getting to do all of them. And I can't imagine a world where I couldn't do that. And while, like, it's exhausting sometimes because I, like, in order to do that, it means that I, like, work full time doing theater, and then I, like, do theater outside of my full time job too. And so, I'm sure that, it's crazy, and I'm tired, like, always. But it's, like, a not bad tired most of the time.
Yeah.
It's, like, a happy tired.
When you're doing what you love to do.
Yeah, exactly.
It makes it a lot easier.
Exactly, yeah.
And I totally get that. I mean, I know when I was just acting full-time, I got bored.
Yeah.
You know? Because, like, directing and producing is where I find, like, my art and my joy. You know, I'd get into these longer runs of shows, and it was like, oh, we're open. Okay.
Yeah.
Now I just have to be the trained monkey that goes out and does the show.
Yeah.
And that, for me,
you always have to have something else going on.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for coming in and chatting today,
thank
Bradley.
You,
I cannot wait to see the show. I'm so excited, and I know great hands, and you've got a great cast.
Thank
so,
yeah.
Bravo, break legs at opening, all
thank
of the
you
above.
So much.
Once again, Fun Home will be at the Black Box Theater in downtown Moline from May 30th to June 14th. And you can find more information and tickets at www.theblackboxtheater.com. Once again, thanks to Bradley, thanks to Quad City Bank and Trust, and thank you to our producer, Mark, for all his support. Go see the show. It's going to be awesome.
Yeehaw.
I'm Ben Gujan, and this was Talking Art.